Amador County Board of Supervisors meeting will come to order. The board has met in closed session, and the only item discussed was conference with labor negotiators number 2, and direction was given to staff. So with that, if you could all stand and join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States.
Thank you very much. I have several blue slips today, and I'll cover them all now. One is on the on closed session. This is a conference with property negotiators. So we'll make that item 1A, 1B, make it on the closed session agenda. And the other blue slip is on our consent agenda. That is dispense with formal bid process for emergency replacement of HVAC at the main library. So under the consent agenda, make that as miscellaneous item 7C. We also have one addendum to the agenda. That would be Community Development Agency. Discussion and possible action relative to adoption and presentation of a resolution honoring Mr. Roger Stewart. We will make that as item 6A on our regular agenda. With that, there are no other changes. Can I hear a motion to approve the agenda?
A motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
With it.
Moved and seconded to approve the agenda with modifications. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Public matters not on the agenda. Discussion items only. No action to be taken. Any person may address the board at this time on any subject within the jurisdiction of the Amador County Board of Supervisors. However, any matter that requires action may be referred to staff or a committee for report and recommendation for possible action at subsequent board meetings. Is there any public comment at this time? None. Supervisor Novelli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we have many guests here in the audience, and we'll be presenting them with many situations in regards to their time with the county. I just wanted to bring up one point. Mr. Floyd Martin was presented an award by Assemblyman Frank Bigelow for being Veteran of the Year Award, and also, too, we have two gentlemen in the county that have done above and beyond their time of service for the county. One is Chief Ray Blankenheim, who has put in 44 years with the fire service in Amador County. He has announced his retirement. And the other one that has announced his retirement is Mr. Bobby Oliveria. His real name is Robert, but I call him Bobby because I used to work with him. And he's getting ready to retire in September, and I believe he'll have close to 37 years of retirement. So I just wanted to bring up those two points. One other thing, Mr. Chairman, if I may, Ranch House Estates up in upcountry area is looking for board members as we speak. And also, to don't forget, everybody, we have the Camp Out for Cancer coming up real soon. And I want to keep everybody aware that cancer touches all of us. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I believe everybody's probably aware of it, but I'll just make mention in case you're not. We have Amador County Fair coming up this weekend, so looks like the weather's going to be good. Probably a good place to go and see some friends and have a good time.
While you're at the fair, you can buy your Baxter Black tickets for the Fair Foundation event on October 18th, too. And that's about the only way we're going to keep the fair running in the future, it looks like. So, okay, hearing no other public comments, then we'll move on to approval of the consent agenda. with the blue slip.
Move approval of the consent agenda with the addition of item 7C.
Second.
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Now we'll move on to probably the most important part of our agenda. Item 6, Auditor's Office discussion of possible action relative to adoption and presentation of a resolution honoring Ms. Susie Morton upon her retirement from the County of Amador. Ms. Morton, could you come forward, please? In the matter of resolution recognizing and honoring Susie Morton for her 24 years of public service, whereas Susie was born on March 6, 1950, the youngest of four children to Babe and Marie Garbarini, and whereas Susie got her first job, a non-paying position, as soon as she was able to read. Her parents owned the Amador Ledger, and her job was to proof the newspaper and any other print job each week with her siblings. And whereas she attended Jackson Elementary and graduated from Jackson High School in 1968, and whereas Susie married in 1970 and was busy being a mom to her first two children, as well as completing her AA in business from Delta College in 1978, and whereas that same year she started working as a seamstress and retail clerk for the Gold Diggers, a garment manufacturer in Amador County, and whereas in 1980 she returned to her roots at the newspaper and got a paying position in the office of the Amador Ledger Dispatch for a year, and whereas from 1981 to 1989 she worked as a teller at Wells Fargo Bank in Jackson, and whereas Susie married Mark Morton in 1986 and had her third child in 1987, and whereas on March 16, 1989, Susie started her career with Amador County as an account clerk 3 in the auditor's office under Auditor John Kirkpatrick and has held different positions within that office, culminating as a payroll specialist 2 under Auditor Joe Lowe. Whereas Susie will now be able to spend more time with her 6 grandchildren, sewing, quilting, and traveling mostly to the Duck Club with Mark. My wife made me watch the Duck Dynasty last night. So. Therefore, be it hereby resolved by the Board of Supervisors of the County of Amador, State of California, that said board does hereby extend to Susie our sincere and grateful appreciation for her 24 years of dedicated service to Amador County and our best wishes to her for continued success, happiness, and good health in the years to come. And this resolution was unanimously passed by the Board of Supervisors.
I would just like to thank all my coworkers. I've worked for some amazing people, with some amazing people. It's been a wonderful ride, and I'm ready to get off.
Is there anyone that would like to say a few words about Ms. Morton before we move on? This is your only chance.
Well, I would say this, when we used to use our own vehicles for travel, and if you didn't have proof of insurance, she was on you like a duck on a gym duck.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
I know I bug you once in a while in the office down there, and you were always cheerful and helpful. I appreciate that from my fellow county employees, and we're going to miss you around here.
Amen.
Enjoy retirement.
Nice. Tough track. Being someone that kept track of payroll for a number of years, I'm sure you're not going to miss that malaise of fractional percentages to keep track of and make it all balance out at the end of the year. But you've done a great job at it, Susie, and you will be missed.
Yes, Susie, yeah, thank you very much for all the time you put in, and I know being a county employee, sometimes it gets a little difficult, so I want to say thank you.
All right, thank you. I'm going to move on to our blue slip, or our addendum item, and this is Community Development Agency and honoring Roger Stewart upon his adoption. Here's his retirement from Amador County. Come on up, Roger. He kind of adopted you over the last 24 years. All right. In the matter of resolution recognizing and honoring Roger Stewart for 24 years of service with Amador County, something about 24 years today. Whereas Roger Stewart was born on June 29, 1957 in Washington, Indiana, as the second child of two, and whereas Roger's family moved that same year to Bloomington, Indiana, into the house where his parents still reside, and whereas Roger attended Purdue University, earning a Bachelor of Science degree in Forest Management in 1981, and whereas Roger later continued his education at Oregon Institute of Technology, earning a Bachelor of Science degree in Civil Engineering Technology in 1988, and whereas Roger started his career with Amador County in July 1989 as a junior civil engineer in the Water Resources Department, working with Roderick Schuler, and continued as Public Works employee when Water Resources and Public Works merged, and whereas in July 2006 was promoted to Senior Project Engineer, where he still holds that position, and whereas Roger has always strived to bring various projects, issues, and or disputes to a positive resolution, particularly serving on the Technical Advisory Committee since 1990, and whereas Roger says he will enjoy his time with his family back in Indiana, listening to bluegrass, going backpacking, and watching NASCAR or any various races he can find. Therefore, be it resolved by the Board of Supervisors of the County of Amador, State of California, the said board does hereby recognize and congratulate Roger Stewart for his dedication towards the Department of Transportation and Public Works and the citizens of Amador County. And a resolution was duly passed by the board unanimously. Roger.
Well, I would like to thank everyone. I never expected to be here beyond just a few years. It's been a very interesting career. It's been a good one. And I've worked with a lot of people, a lot of good people on every side of the issue, both county employees and citizens of the county. And I'd like to thank everyone for all the help and assistance I've received.
Roger, I'll start on you before you leave. I think that one whereas in here is particularly correct, that just your demeanor, for one, meant a lot to settle disputes and resolve issues that came up. I know I met with you out on project sites occasionally, and your demeanor, your style went a long ways in solving issues before they blew up, so I appreciate that.
Thank you.
I would ditto that. It was well said, Chairman Forrester. Roger, your demeanor, just that, has always been one that sort of calmed a situation that otherwise had the opportunity to blow up. So I appreciate the way you worked with the public. You truly exhibited customer service, and that's something that's very important to me, that our county employees try to treat the public at all times with the kind of courtesy that they would if they were having to earn their business rather than we were the only place to go. So I appreciate the way you dealt with the customers on and that. And my only thing was I almost wish you to come to Amador County with your degree in forest management and been able to apply your common sense principles in our forests around here. I'm not sure whether I'd rather have you here or up there, but
if there'd been a position, I might have.
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you.
Well, Roger, you know, I've worked with you for about 21 years, either through Department of Water Resources or ARSA, and you know what? You're going to have some hard time filling your shoes. You've been really good for the county. We're going to miss you. So don't get too far away. We might need you for a consultant.
Thank you.
Yes, Roger, I'd just like to say it's been a pleasure working with you. It's been a pleasure having you at those TAC meetings. And I know when I was a public work employee, it was nice always seeing you out on a job. So I want to say thank you very much for all your time.
And I'd like to also get on those previous comments. I think it's very obvious that you treat people very fair. You're a cool cucumber. I mean, you look at things very just the facts. And I don't see any personal hang-ups. You've done a very good job. And if I'd have known you had a forestry degree in management, maybe we could have took a little road trip up the mountains and did some management. So thank you very much for your service. And I think both employees, Amador County has a lot of very good quality employees, and it's been a good experience working with you.
I'd like to ask anyone else that would like to say a few words this time. Hearing none, we have two employees we're going to miss dearly, 48 years of combined experience, and I'd like to give them both one more big hand. So. Now you can, oh, hey, don't leave yet. We still have a meeting to go on. Everybody's
you forgot. Actually, it would be good if you folks could hear this next presentation. If you got a minute or two, I'd appreciate it. And I think the people that spent their hard-earned labor would appreciate it as well.
And we'll jump right into it then. Item 7 is the Amador County Historical Society. Discussion of possible action relative to adoption and presentation of a resolution recognizing the commitment and efforts of the Amador County Historical Society in restoring and reopening the Amador County Museum to the public. And I've made the last two presentations. My voice is failing me a little bit, so I've asked Supervisor Plaus to make this.
And thank you for staying for this. And I just wanted to point out that our museum here in Amador County is something that a lot of people consider very special. If you look around, I see people in this room whose families have donated items to our museum that are currently on display. And it's something that just by virtue of the trials and tribulations of getting construction work done from the county's perspective had caused the museum to be closed for about 4 years. We were unable to complete the ADA requirements necessary to open it and other structural requirements that were needed. And a lot of discussions and negotiations with now past Larry Sonato. We miss him dearly. But he found a man in Phil Gerlani to step up and take on this task. And Phil said that Larry had came to him with this proposal because he was the right guy for the job, and I definitely concur with that. He took a great deal of care in working with myself and other supervisors and our CAO to get an agreement hammered out to be able to allow volunteers to do construction work on county-owned property and so forth. It's a huge hassle factor. But he was able to get that done, get the agreement hammered out, a management agreement, and most importantly, dive in and use his construction skills to get a lot of the seismic and ADA projects done. And I know it wasn't just Phil. There's been a lot of volunteerism that went into what got done out there being accomplished from members throughout the community. So I would just like to commend Phil and all of the volunteers that he was able to put together to get this project done. I'm sorry, Phil, we had a little snafu at the last meeting. I didn't realize you were bringing all the volunteers, and we hadn't gotten a resolution done yet. So we've got it done now, something that the Historical Society can hang in their office space and so forth and look at with a great deal of pride for having get this accomplished. So I will just ask Phil to come up. And Georgia, you too. You've been a part of the museum for a long, long time. We appreciate both your efforts. Right there is fine. We don't have a photo op going right here. I'd just like to read this, though. Whereas the Amador County Historical Society was founded in 1944 to gather and preserve the county's rich gold rush history, and whereas the Amador County Historical Society encouraged and persuaded county supervisors to acquire the old Brown family two-story home on Courthouse Hill from family heirs, and whereas the Amador County Museum was established and dedicated on June 18, 1949, whereas the museum operated until July 2008 when the county closed the museum due to unfavorable costs of needed structural and Americans with Disabilities Act improvements. Whereas on May 14, 2013, the Amador County Board of Supervisors entered into an agreement with the Amador County Historical Society to provide for the completion of said improvements and act as the manager for the property. Whereas the Amador County Historical Society and several volunteers, emphasize several, worked diligently to restore the museum property and reopen it to the public. Whereas on June 15, 2013, the Amador County Museum was reopened to the public and is staffed by Amador County Historical Society members and volunteers. Therefore, be it resolved by the Amador County Board of Supervisors, hereby recognizes and compliments the hard work and commitment of the Amador County Historical Society in restoring a valuable piece of Amador County history and reopening the museum to be enjoyed for generations to come. Hopefully all of you get a chance to go by and see what these folks have done there. They've done an exemplary job.
Thank you, Supervisor Plass, and the rest of the board, Chuck Eiley. It's been a long process and been a lot of hard work along the way, a lot of compromise, a lot of people working together to get the project done. It's been very gratifying to the Historical Society to be able to do this and get the museum back open to the public. And now what we need is the public to support us in operating the museum. A lot of hard work's been done, but keeping the museum staffed and keeping the grounds up is going to be a continuing job, and the more volunteers that will come out and help with that, the better it'll be, and we'll be able to keep it open. Thank you again, everyone.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Phil. Those of you entering into retirement might find that as something worthwhile to do.
Anyone like to make any comments on that before we move on?
Thank you all for staying.
Thank you.
Ted, go ahead.
I just wanted to say one thing. Phil or maybe Georgia, are we showing an increase in membership in the Historical Society members, or are we showing a decrease? Okay. Thank you. I know I've been a member a long time. I was just wondering if our membership is going up or down.
Why don't you repeat his answer just so it gets in the record?
Oh, Phil stated that it is showing an increase. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Phil and Georgia, the rest of this Historical Society members for
thank
the
you.
Work they did. All right, we'll move on now to item 8, Sierra Nevada Conservancy, discussion and possible action relative to a presentation by Jim Branham regarding Sierra Nevada Conservancy investments in Amador County. Morning, Jim.
Morning, Jim.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and board members. Thanks for this morning. Opportunity to provide a little bit of an overview of the work the Conservancy has been doing these last few years. And before Supervisor Forrester can say it, I apologize again for not locating our office here. Every time he sees me, he reminds me that Amador County would have been a wonderful location. And we are headquartered in Auburn, but certainly Jackson was high on our list at the time we made that decision. Believe it or not, 7 years ago. It's been a while. Brandon Sanders, who is with me, who is our area representative. I think most of you know Brandon, who represents us here in Amador County and much of the South Central subregion. We have a PowerPoint. Is that coming up? Can I give the give this to the board or have some packets? Can I just
look have them yet, Jim?
Oh, While Brandon's doing that, let me start off with just a very brief background on the Conservancy itself. We have been around since legislation that was passed in 2004, creating the Conservancy for the Sierra Nevada region. Our area is about a quarter of the state, 25 million acres. All are part of 22 counties, and we have a very big, broad mission, which is to really support activities that improve the economic, environmental, and social well-being in the region in a complementary fashion. And within that, there is a number of specific things that we are guided to focus on in this region, including things like promoting recreation and tourism, the natural resources, cultural, historical resources protection, promoting working landscapes, agricultural and forested landscapes so they can continue to be working, providing not only economic benefits but the environmental benefits that come from that, and so on. One of the things that was identified in our statute was reducing the risk of catastrophic fire or natural disasters, including catastrophic fire. So it's been an area we focus a lot on. We have a 16-member board, 13 voting members. We have three federal agencies who are non-voting. And six of our 13 voting members are county supervisors. Each subregion, the six subregions, send a representative to our board. And I think that has been a really important part of the partnership we've had with local government, with counties, with many folks in this region. Probably some still do, but many in the region at the time felt that creating another state agency was not going to exactly be the a solution to a lot of the problems. There was concerns, I think, but I think the relationship we formed with county governments, having six supervisors at any given time on our board, has been extremely helpful. Supervisor Baitano was the county liaison for a number of years from the beginning and served on our board early on, and now Supervisor Onetto is the alternate and was already pressed into duty once at a board meeting to serve as a sitting member. Supervisor Kevin Kahn from Mariposa County is the current South Central Subregion representative, and Amador County will be next next in line for a seat on the board come January of next year. Okay, go ahead and just move through that. There is the map, again, about a quarter of the state, only a quarter of the geographic scope, but about 65% of the state's water originates in this region. It's an important region for a variety of reasons, including recreational opportunity, the natural resources that come from here, and, of course, the water that that is provided to really much of California. Go ahead. So we thought this was a good opportunity to come around and present to you because we've reached pretty much the end of our Proposition 84 grant program. We have a little bit of a small amount of funding remaining, and we will be awarding that probably within the next year. But we thought it was a good time to come in and be able to talk to you about how the nearly $50 million that we've awarded has been spent. In your packet is a report on that that provides specifics. We highlighted 10 different projects to be representative of the nearly 300 that were funded. In Amador County, there was a little over $1 million worth of Prop 84 awards. And just to remind folks, Proposition 84 was passed in 2006 by the voters in California. Our Conservancy received about $50,000 to award through a grant program. It's been a very successful program. All 22 counties have received projects in all 22 counties have received funding.
Say $50,000?
$50 million. Did I say $50,000? $50,000 wouldn't have went very far.
No.
$50 million, a little bit more. And it's been a competitive process, transparent process. Every grant that we've awarded, the full application is available on our website. And I think it's been a positive contribution we've been able to make, obviously, in this region in a variety of ways. And we'll talk a little bit more about some of the specifics. But as I say, in Amador County, a little over $1 million has been awarded, eight projects. And just a couple of photos representing these the six different grantees that have received projects that include the Amador Fire Safe Council, the community Amador Community Foundation, Amador Water Agency, California Land Stewardship Institute, the Central Sierra Resource Conservation and Development Council, and the California Association of Resource Conservation Districts have all had projects funded in this county. There they are. There's the list there. So go ahead, Brandon. So Proposition 84 has been an important part of what we've done, and I think having a grant program to fund projects, that conclude everything from the planning stages that were going to lead to an on-the-ground project to on-the-ground implementation has been, you know, an extremely important contribution that we've been able to make to this region. But we've done a number of other things that I want to touch on very briefly that are more region-wide in nature, and we'll focus back on Amador County in just a moment. The Sierra Nevada Forest and Community Initiative is something we launched a few years back that really grew out of what we saw in this region, and I've heard you a couple of the supervisors make reference this morning already, based on the gentleman's retirement, about the challenges we faced in our forest. The fire forest, the effect it has on communities, and the gridlock that we saw through much of the Sierra Nevada, particularly on the public lands. And we launched this initiative with the notion that we were going to really work to bring folks together, try to find where there is common ground, where we can agree on some things that need to be done. Our conversations with the industry, with local government, with many in the environmental community, we didn't find too many folks that felt we were on the right path. So we launched this. All 22 counties, including your county, endorsed this initiative. It's led to a lot of very local activities, collaboratives, folks coming together to try to figure it out. It's also led to our engagement at a regional level with the Forest Service and BLM, primarily the Forest Service, in trying to assist them in figuring out how we can get our forest healthy again, and do so in a way that benefits our local communities. Regional Forester, shortly after this initiative was launched, the Regional Forester, Randy Moore, made a statement that the Forest Service needs to be treating about 500,000 acres a year in California, much of that in the Sierra Nevada, and depending on whose numbers you use, they're treating somewhere between 100,000 and 200,000 acres a year. And treatment means a variety of things, but a lot of it is really reducing the fire risk, improving the health of the forest, improving meadows, and so on. So this has been an important initiative for us, and I want to talk about in just a moment how that is, what that has resulted in here locally. Another regional effort that we've been involved with is the Sierra Nevada Geotourism Project. As I said earlier, our statute was specific in directing us to promote recreational and tourism opportunities in our region. And this was a project that kind of came to us from National Geographic Foundation and the Sierra Business Council. The three of us have partnered to create a map, which is really now just a portal, if you will, to the on-site presence of the geotourism project, really identifying those opportunities that are place-based, that are unique to the place where they exist. And as you can see, there are 93 active destinations in Amador County. It is something that we've worked with our partners to create, not only the online, the hard map, the hard paper map, an online website, but also phone apps that make it very convenient for folks who are out about figure out what there might be to see that's a little different and unique in places like Amador County. And the last regional effort I wanted to mention was Great Sierra River Cleanup. This is something that we have helped coordinate now. It really builds on the work of a lot of local groups who have been doing river cleanups around the Sierra for a long time. But we've come together with them, tried to build upon that. We've got about 4,000 volunteers now that annually in September go out and are a part of cleaning up the watershed. Unfortunately, it looks like something we will probably continue to do for a long time, because every year there's trash and garbage and things that we find in these streams that continue to be a challenge for us. But we've really worked hard around this region to try to, as I say, help those who are already doing it and creating some new cleanup opportunities. And one of the things we're trying to use this with now, and the McCollumy River watershed is a good example of this, is we're trying to figure out how to grow this event, but also to use it as a reminder to our downstream friends that our stewardship of the watersheds is important to them. They should care about what we're doing here, not just cleaning up the trash, but how we're managing the forest and how we're restoring the health of the watershed, because they are the beneficiaries from the work that goes on up here in this region. So it's a great event that we hope, as I say, to use as kind of a, frankly, as kind of a public relations tool as well. And finally, I wanted to mention the work that we've been doing here in the county beyond our Proposition 84 grants. The Amador Calaveras Consensus Group is something we helped co-convene with then-Supervisor Steve Walensky in Calaveras County. It started out as the Calaveras Consensus Group and is now the Amador Calaveras Consensus Group. A number of the partners who have been involved with that are in the audience today. And it was really building on that Forest and Community Initiative idea that to bring people together in the communities, the people that, and we've had a philosophy at the Conservancy from the beginning that the folks who live and work and recreate in these communities will always know more about what's going on than we do. You are the local experts. What we hope to do is be able to bring some resources or expertise or assistance into those efforts. And I think ACCG is a really good example of folks coming together. The first meeting, there were people in the room that didn't like each other. I mean, it may not like each other still, but they're working together. And I think there was a kind of amazed at how quickly folks came to consensus around what could be done in the communities, what could be done in terms of forest thinning, removing biomass, putting local people to work. It's been, I think, a great success story. It's still a challenge with federal contracting rules and other challenges, but putting local contractors, loggers and folks with equipment, woods workers to work, Native American crews have been created there, and there's work getting done. Not at the scope and the scale that it needs to be, but that consensus process really represents an opportunity of how we move from much of the conflict that we have had for so long. And as we have reminded folks, is that, you know, that if you think there's a better way to do it, or if it's been working the way that if you think it's been working well the way it's been going in terms of these challenges, keep doing it. But if you really want to try to figure out, is there another way to bring the environmental community, the contractors, local government, all of the parties that have interest together, and figure out where you've got common ground. And after a few meetings, the first map was brought back by the Forest Service and BLM of areas where there was agreement that work needed to be done, where we didn't really need a lot more discussion. And it was, I think, somewhat staggering at the amount of acreage that showed up there. That has led to in part, the Cornerstone Collaborative Forest Landscape Restoration Act project. That's a federal funding source. It has brought new money into the area. We have three of them this year in Nevada, one here in the Mokelumne River watershed, that I think is another success story in terms of the ability of folks to work together, come up with a proposal that in this case was successful in a very competitive effort nationwide and is bringing, as I said, new money in to get the work done. We've also been working with local and statewide partners on a Mokelumne avoided cost analysis, and it's part of a larger project. But our real goal there is to try to identify, quantify the benefits that come from our watersheds, in this case the Mokelumne, but also the costs that are associated with not taking care of the watershed. And that's an analysis that's going on. We hope to have completed later this summer. East Bay Mud has been a good partner in that analysis in terms of really trying to understand, are there costs that can be avoided? We know there are, but can we quantify the cost to be avoided by doing things like thinning the forest, by trying to reduce the risk of catastrophic fire, and improving the health of the watershed to a downstream beneficiary such as East Bay Mud? We hope it's replicable in other parts of the Sierra, and as I say, it's been a project we've been involved in. Supervisor Neto, did you have?
I'm kind of curious, who's actually doing the work? Is it Sierra Nevada Conservancy staff? Are you hiring consultants to do this work? Or
both. We've had staff dedicated to that project for a couple of years now. I've got two people that have been spending a lot of their time. There was the group came together, and we did hire a consultant who has done a lot of the actual analysis. The Forest Service has been a partner. The Nature Conservancy and an international organization has been a partner, as many of the local groups and stakeholders have been a part of that as well. So we've contributed significant resources ourselves, both in terms of our staff as well as some funding to help get the work done.
So basically it's being headed by a Sierra Nevada Conservancy. Is that correct?
Our partners would probably be a little hesitant to say the avoided cost analysis we've really been the lead on, yes, working with Forest Service and the Nature Conservancy as kind of the primary partners at that level with local stakeholders. But, yeah, I'd say it's safe to say we've been leading that effort.
Well, I'm just curious question on that. So you have the Conservancy, the Forest Service, like the Nature Conservancy. Do you have any industry representation there, too, like from like timber?
They are involved with the work that's going on in the analysis. I'm not familiar with all of the exact parties. Brandon, do you have any?
You're going to have to come on up to the mic, please.
Brandon.
It's not my primary project, but I do know that there's a series of technical and advisory committees that do incorporate timberland owners as well as the water utilities and other relevant stakeholders.
Yeah, we'd be happy, Supervisor, to get you in.
Yeah, I'd like to see basically a diagram how it lays out.
Sure, that'd be great. And
pyramid type deal.
What's that?
pyramid-type deal.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. That's good. You know, we know enough about the analysis already that I think it's going to tell us something that many of us probably understood, I know you understand, is when you have large events, large fires through there, there are significant consequences. This particular model, the analysis we're looking at, is really the fire sediment model, so it's going to look at what happens under current conditions, what happens modeling when you reduce the fuel load and so on, and primarily from a sediment standpoint. And as East Bay MUZ, as I mentioned, I should probably reiterate, has been a really good partner in terms of this analysis, trying to understand that.
I think it's probably
PG&E, not so much. But
I would think it'd be a real good project to be able to look at and say this is, you know, ramifications of catastrophic fires, because, you know, it's been out there for a long time and getting progressively worse, and if we don't address it, you know, we can't just bury our head in the sand, or when all the sediment comes down the river, we'll be buried in the sand.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting, this analysis, or this project took off, and the analysis started, and now as we are, which will be a little bit of a segue into the next slide, but as we are looking at what the future holds for the Conservancy, but really for work that's going to take place in the Sierra, you know, we are in the water bond that is slated for the next year's November ballot for funding. Nobody believes that bond in its current form is going to stay on the ballot, and whether something replaces it or not is still a debate. But as you well know, one of the major discussions we have at the state level on water comes down to one of the major issues always comes down to storage. It's a big issue for a lot of people. How do you create additional storage capacity? And that's a battle that gets fought out every time there's a water bond, every time there's a water issue. One of the things that we're beginning to talk more about is we've got a lot of existing storage capacity, a lot of reservoirs that up and down the Sierra Nevada. And there's a natural process that fills them with sediment, but there's an unnatural process when you have these large damaging fires that really create moonscapes. And beginning to talk about the importance of taking those actions upstream of the reservoirs that can reduce that significant increase in sedimentation. This modeling, I think, will be stunning to some people when they see the amount of sediment that could come off of a, not even a worst-case scenario fire in the watershed. But I think incorporating that discussion in terms of the effect and that relationship, which I don't think most people think about. You know, you can talk about building new reservoirs or building new off-stream storage, or you can talk about raising the height of the dams. But when you realize what we don't see is what's below the surface, literally, on how much that sedimentation is occurring. And it's a pretty staggering number, we think, when you really look at it from that standpoint. And what we know is when you have those large events, it increases the by orders of magnitude. So it's going to be an important analysis that I think will feed a larger policy discussion at the state level.
Excuse me. So you talk quite a bit about fires, but what about the large storms that we have, like in 2011 and I believe it was 97, 96, the turbidity and the sedimentation that those bring to the river that is significant just as much as a fire would be?
Well, it's a combination of the two, really. I mean, there's not much we can do about the storms occurring. I think doing work to try to, you know, improve riparian areas, restore meadows, do things that will help with that natural event and the effects of that natural event. But it's really that fire followed by those major storm events that is when you look at the numbers, it just drives, it kind of goes off the charts in terms of what those impacts can be. So there's a variety of things we can do. When we talk about making the watershed and the forest healthy, it's not just removing fuels from a fire perspective. That's a big issue. But it's restoring meadows to health so they're functioning properly. Help, you know, making sure that the riparian area, the stream zones, are going to be as secure as they can be. Large events are going to bring sediment down out of the mountains. That's a given. It's how much can you neutralize that and that, and how much can you minimize that. And, you know, and the other thing that we are, you know, cognizant of right now, and we're in a cycle that appears to be the case, but the conditions out there this year, from a fire standpoint, when we had the fire down in Mariposa County, some of our employees were evacuated for that fire. It was late May, and the Cal Fire folks and Forest Service folks were talking about the conditions being comparable to early August. And obviously, we haven't done much to change that. So this could be a year. Every year in this year is that year where there could be that large fire. And you know, fire is a part of our ecosystem. It's natural. It occurs. It has always occurred here. It's the conditions out there that aren't aren't natural and aren't what they used to be. And, you know, it's that buildup of fuel that's occurred. It's people living in these watersheds, in these forests. Now, it's a very different situation. And it's those large, intense fires. We'd love to be, I think many of us would love to see the forest be back in a condition where fire was more beneficial than harmful, as it once was and could be again, but we're a long ways from there. And I should mention one other thing, the work that's been going on in conjunction with Amador Calaveras Consensus in looking at how do we go out and take care of the watershed, take care of the forest, and do so in a way that benefits the communities. One of the things that brought us to the table early on is, what do we do with the material that isn't merchantable from a standpoint of logs? What do we do with all that biomass that needs to be removed? And there's a lot of it all up and down the Sierra Nevada. And the Forest Service struggles with how to do that work and how to contract that work and how much of it can you put on the back of logs coming out and so on. And it is a real challenge. And so it's led us to be very active in the forest biomass energy area. We were on the edges of, but tried to be supportive of, the efforts when the facility in Ione, Buena Vista, opened here a few years ago. And we're working with a number of groups around the Sierra, including some folks in Calaveras County, about putting some smaller scale facilities in to take the biomass, to make more projects economically feasible, but also create some economic activity just from the use of the biomass. And it's a real challenge. It's one of the things the Forest Service face when they're doing these projects. If you don't have any use for that, you know, the traditional method is to pile and burn it. And, you know, that's something we'd like to see less of from a standpoint of taking that material and giving it some economic value. So it's something that I would say is kind of grown out of our work here in the Amador and Calaveras Consensus Group, and really understanding how vital it is to have that outlet for that kind of material. So finally, the future for us, it is a bit uncertain. I heard, actually, when I got to the office this morning before we took off, Brandon was watching Supervisor Forrester on the local television station talk about this agenda item and said that there was an uncertain future. And while our core organization is funded through the Environmental License Plate Fund, it's a non-general fund source of revenue and has been fairly stable. And so we believe we'll still be around to be able to help in a variety of ways, provide expertise and support in a variety of activities such as ACCG. We realize that without a grant program, we're not going to be able to be as successful as we'd like to be. So we're working hard on a number of fronts to try to make sure we're a part of a future discussion. We find it a bit frustrating when we have to explain to people outside of the area why an area like the Sierra Nevada ought to be included in a water bond. We actually have pretty well connected to the state's water future, and that is not evident to everyone. I think there's still a view by some that the Delta magically bubbles up out of the ground there, and that's the source of California's water. So it's a constant struggle for us. We're working hard on that and trying to figure out if there are other opportunities to bring funding into this region that will benefit us, our mission, and what we hope are the communities and the people living in this region. So with that, I want to thank you for your time. It's been a great experience for me the last few years to be able to be out and work with many of you on these activities and these projects. And with that, I don't know if that was timed, but I'd be happy to answer any questions any of you might have.
Thank you, Jim. I saw the first water bond proposal that was pulled back because of the amount of money that, I think, $11 billion.
Right.
The second one, I don't believe it's much different than that, is it?
No, I mean, not really, yes.
And in the first one, you know, what bothers me is the Sierra Nevada Conservancy funding level is always much lower than the Tahoe Conservancy, the Coastal Commission, Coastal Conservancy, and some of these others. Tahoe Conservancy, it is a beautiful region, but we're talking about the whole Sierra Nevada region and why we can't get our legislators and primarily the leaders, Senator Steinberg, to realize that, you know, this is a much bigger region than just the Tahoe region.
Yeah,
what do we have to achieve that?
Right, and I'd even go a little further than that, Supervisor. I think obviously the conservancy is one piece of that, but just the lack of understanding how important it is to invest in this region, whether it comes through us or comes through other entities. I think this region is consistently shortchanged in that regard, and there are 10 state conservancies in the state. We were the ninth; the Delta one was created after us, and some of them are quite small. Some of them are important to their area, but none of them really cover an area that is important to California's economic and environmental well-being going forward, and it is frustrating. So I don't know. I mean, we're doing everything we can do. We certainly encourage all of our friends and partners and folks who care about it to be a part of that never-ending education process that has to occur. Again, most of the members of the legislature and most of those making these decisions aren't from the Sierra Nevada. We've been doing some field trips. In fact, this Friday we'll be up in the McCollum River watershed with some legislative staff folks. We just had one council because of the fair, Supervisor Neto, so sorry if we are competing with that, but I don't think we're much competition. But it's just ongoing effort to take them up and see firsthand what's going on up here in this region, how important it is, and what the connection is to those folks downstream. And so, you know, when you look at an $11 billion bond and you realize that the funds that were identified specifically that would come to this region was less than 1%, we don't think we're being greedy asking for a little bit more for this region to do the things we need to do. But it's a constant challenge.
The only other thing that struck me in your conversation, maybe you don't have a lot to do with this or can't have a lot of say over it, but you talked about storage and that not really being a critical component in some of the bond language. But at a time where we should be adding to storage, and especially critical because of if you look at where our water levels are now, the feds and the state are actually promoting taking storage out of the area. So it makes no sense to me, and I don't know when California is going to wake up in that respect.
Yeah, that's always a very controversial issue around all of the water discussions. We don't really have a direct role to play. I will say this, though, Supervisor, when you start to look at the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, you start to understand what's going to be required for that plan to be successful, if it ever is, in fact, put in place, and if it is successful. Fresh water is a key component of that, having water coming into the Delta. We think there's a lot of things we can do to help that without getting into those other discussions about storage, keeping our existing storage capacity, restoring watersheds so they're healthy and they're functioning in a way that the timing of the water that comes down, which can be critical from a flood control standpoint and so on. So it's clearly a major component. It always is a major part of the discussion. There's funding to lead towards additional storage in the existing water bond that will not likely go forward, and there's quite a debate going on as to how that gets treated in the future.
Just that's a very tough issue because, you know, you need water for consumptive use and water's for the farmers, and it's going to be a tough battle. It'd be interesting. That's all I have to say.
That's one way to put it. Yeah, it's always a tough one. So.
No, I'd like to touch on that, too. I had my, my wake-up call probably about 30 years ago. We had people move in next to us, and they're from the Bay Area, so you do the right thing. You meet your neighbors, and you get together. My mom was having those rotary old hand juicers for making lemonade, and she's there making lemonade. And this, I'd say a fairly bright kid, he's probably 13, 14 years old in the city, asked my mom what she was doing. And she was busy. She said, "I'm just making lemonade." And he says, "No, really, what are you doing?" She says, "I'm making lemonade," and kept twisting that lemon. And he says, "No, I really want to know what you're doing." She said, "I'm making lemonade." And he said, "No, lemonade comes out of a bottle." And you could have heard a pin drop on her house because the kid was a smart kid, just did not know. And I see the same problem coming out of the cities anymore, whether it's on the farms, the food, the forest, the water. Not all of them, but I think a lot of people, as far as they're concerned, quite a few of the water comes out of a tap. You know, you go and turn the faucet on, that's how water comes from. That's almost their train of thought. And so you want to have them pay money up here to the forest? You know, that's a silly thought. Why should they do that? Because, you know, their water company supplies them water. And I think that's kind of the battle that you're up against.
Absolutely. With all due respect to the people that work in the state capitol, there are days when I walk out there kind of shaking my head in disbelief about how little understanding there is of those connections. And so, I mean, we can sit around and complain about it, or we can try to do something about it. So we're trying to do something about it, and I'd invite you to help in any way you can. I know we've got Supervisor Forrester. I've known him for a number of years through Regional Council of Rural Counties, which is no longer called that, but it's still RCRC. And I think, you know, really finding partners who have a presence in Sacramento and who are, you know, they face a lot of the same issues, representing rural counties, obviously, finding those partnerships where we can just, it's never ending, the educational process in terms of helping members and their staff understand the connections. And it's a struggle in rural California, all over.
And to that point, Have you had any field days or things like that for state legislators to actually bring them up into this year? Because RCRC has been successful on different air board issues, getting select legislators to actually see what's going on the ground in the field.
Yeah, we've had some success, but Supervisor Brian Daly from Lassen County, who I know you know, Supervisor, Assemblyman, who was a supervisor in Lassen County, served on our board as the supervisor for the whole time he was we were in existence before he went to the state assembly. And one of the things that Assemblyman Daly is really dedicated to is getting people out into the region. So I think it was about a month ago, he brought three of his colleagues along on a field trip that we went up into Nevada County and talked about the forest health issues, talked a lot about the mining legacy issues up there, as you have here. And it was great. I mean, it was a wonderful opportunity for them to get out and for them to kind of see it firsthand and talk to people locally and so on. And it's going to be great having somebody like Brian there, who's really committed to getting those folks out. He's going to be down and staying at one of the members' mother's home in Los Angeles, because the deal was, I'll come out to your region if you'll go down and spend a night in East L.A. So he's going to do it, and he's going to bring them back up here. So having somebody like that as an advocate is really helpful. But the more of that we can do, the better. We've had pretty good success at a staff level, and we're continuing to work on that. But, yeah, it's critical. And I think when you see it and you can hear it and you can talk about it, not in a jammed-in 15-minute meeting in the Capitol somewhere, but you're actually out there, it's nothing can replace it.
I think that's where you make your success. Supervisor Bob Williams did that with Assemblymember Ma.
Right.
And very more to the left base, Assemblymember Ma, but common sense minded, and he got her to their county to look at county fairs, and you know what? She became a fair advocate after that, and she was a leader until she left the Assembly.
Yeah, she became a real champion, I know, for agriculture. So I should mention, mining legacy. I forgot to mention when I closed there that our last remaining amount of Prop 84 funds, which will be awarded over the next year, is really focused again on the forest health issues and the mining legacy issue. So we are in the process of opening the door to try to figure out what grant opportunities there may be for those particular focus areas, and that will be occurring over the next year. And I know Brandon's already been meeting with people here in Amador County about some of those ideas. So that will be our last effort under Prop 84.
You know, back to the visitation, that's good. Any time we can get any of the legislators up there, we need to do it. But I think we need to get some of the leadership from the minority and the majority leadership from the Senate and Assembly up there. You know, you go down there and you see Senator Steinberg walk around with a glow on his face, happy because he thought he'd done some good, passing more legislation than we need. So I think it'd be foolish to get the leadership up there.
Yeah, we've been trying to get our crystal ball out and figure out who the next wave are and try to see if we could get some of those
at folks
engaged. But, you know, I'm not sure that's going to be a very...
I know it's tough. I mean, real tough to do it.
Professor Plasky, anything?
Yeah, Jim, you mentioned, trying to educate these folks as to the correlation or the direct connection between water health and the Bay Delta program. And at the same time, earlier you mentioned about how your efforts are trying to get back through these thinning procedures, are trying to get back to the conditions that existed years ago when fire was a benefit in the forest rather than such a hindrance that it is now. What correlation do you draw to what was going on years ago that left the forest in those kinds of conditions where fire was a benefit, and to what's not going on now? And do you advocate for whatever processes were going on? And you know where I'm going with this, but I mean, there were processes going on that kept our forests in good health and so forth. And now we're throwing these very difficult to achieve dollars at them to do just thinning projects without the corresponding economic benefit. I mean, some, because you got a few local people that are grinding brush into chips, but the value of the product in the end is so minimal that it doesn't pencil out.
Well, one of the things you realize quickly when you start spending time on this particular issue is how much of the infrastructure has been lost, whether it's a mill or the equipment or so on. And I was up actually I was poaching a little bit out of our region. It was in Siskiyou County because I was invited to go there and talk about biomass. And one of the contractors there, after I'd made my comments, said, but you've missed an important part of the infrastructure that is it is going away, and it's the people. And he was talking about how difficult it was for him, even when he got contracts, to find young people who wanted to go out and live a summer in a little travel trailer and away from civilization and so on, and the skills that go
with
it. It's a huge issue. You look up and down the Sierra Nevada, and you probably are aware of this, but when you get south of Sonora, there's one mill left in Terrabella that still operates south of there. And while there's still some infrastructure in the northern end, it's not what it was. I don't think that infrastructure is going to come back, even if one thought that were the solution in the way that it was there. But it's something you have to be conscious of, and it is something that I think creates challenges that even if you are able to move through the NEPA process, go through the process you need to put projects on the ground, there are a lot of economic challenges around that. That's why we've looked at bioenergy as being one piece of the infrastructure that could be put in place. But it is definitely a challenge, and this is a state that is that can be a tough place to do business. But I think we can move the process forward if we use approaches that brings different parties to the table and talk about what's best for the forest. One of the things that happened early in the process, when we were really kind of asking ourselves the question of what can we do to move things forward, is a conversation I had with a guy by the name of Craig Thomas, who has been the head of Sierra Forest Legacy for a number of years and a frequent litigant against the Forest Service and others on plans. And Craig and I talked about the state of affairs, and he said, I don't want my legacy to be that I won a bunch of appeals or lawsuits and all the habitat burned down. And,
I saw that before.
Well, whatever his thinking was before and whatever led him to what he had done, he has been a tremendous partner and a constructive partner in a lot of efforts. And he has worked hard in the Sierra National Forest to try to work with the Dusen family, who own Terrabella, the Sierra Forest products, running, because he understands how important it is to keep them going in that way. And I've talked to them directly, and they've absolutely confirmed that. So I think, we can learn a lot from how we got here, and we should learn from that, but we also have to figure out, where can we go from here, and how can we do things differently in a way that will move us forward. This natural ecosystem called the Sierra Nevada will never, ever return to what it was. We live in it now. We recreate it. We do things that weren't done except by a small number of people historically. The idea that I sometimes hear, I spent a few years with CDF, now called CAL FIRE, and the idea that we're somehow going to significantly change our approach on fire suppression or initial attack, it's not going to happen in much of this state. So we have to figure out within the kind of this new world we live in this new state of the Sierra Nevada, what can we do to restore forest health? What can we do to create economic activity that can come from that in a reasonable way? And that's what we're trying to do our part. I mean, we're a small little agency doing what we can do, but we're trying to promote the idea that it isn't working the path we've been on. We need to figure out a different way.
Well, you've done a tremendous collaborative balancing act because you haven't been sued by the Center for Biological Diversity, so that says something right there. So, yeah, not yet. Any other board comments before I take
that? No, just back to what led to the decline of the mills around here was lack of sales from the Forest Service. And if you go back in the history of things, the Native Americans had let the forest burn, in the fall. And then sooner or later, some of the ranchers were up there and they'd torch it before they left the Sierras. And they kept a healthy forest, but we've allowed it to build up. And no sales, then you have the power fire up there, and they start to go in and get the timber that's burnt out of there, and you get a lawsuit, lock that up, and all that's wasted. So, very frustrating.
But they confiscated 40 or 50 million out of PG&E for the power fire.
Oh, yeah.
That settlement.
All right. We'll go ahead and take public comment at this time.
Thank you.
Anyone like to make comments? Jim, we might want you back up. You might want to sit right in front. Morning.
Morning. Mark Bennett, and I'd like to say first that we're all forced to make decisions within constrained black boxes that we did not create and often don't like. Therefore, I do not oppose applications for Prop 84 funds. If the money is available, we should take it. However, I have read the Prop 84 grant history, the material from the Sierra Nevada Conservancy and their allied organizations, and wish to make several comments. All these documents and projects are to protect watershed, but there is not one mention that watersheds are threatened because the water remains in the overgrown forest canopy and evaporates before it can reach the ground. There is also no mention of reducing overgrowth forests through increased logging, although there was a very interesting discussion about that a few minutes ago, which would, of course, produce profits rather than subsidy. The Sierra Nevada Conservancy values forests for carbon capture, accepting the fraud of CO2-induced climate change. Today, that increased carbon is making deserts bloom around the world. Also, the Sierra Nevada Conservancy initiates, encourages, and supports efforts that improve, among other things, the social well-being of the Sierra Nevada region. They obviously feel that that's so important. It was in just that handful of slides. Promoting social well-being is a radically new concept of government responsibility to my mind, and I wonder about its origin and purpose. There is also a troubling, godlike desire to micromanage nature and other areas of endeavor, expressed partly in the inordinate expenditure for studies. Look at all that money. The vast majority of that is going to so-called scientists and bureaucrats to study things. The website of the Central Sierra Resource Conservation and Development Area informed me that the ancestry of 46% of the white population of this area is of English, German, and Irish origin. That may make a great freshman sociology term paper, but it seems hard to justify as the expense of an indebted government. None of what I've said is meant to abrogate among the many millions of dollars and 100-plus projects the value of some of these projects, such as fire breaks and others. These are vital. But can existing parts of government do this? How many agencies do we need? Many of the Prop 84 monies have been appropriated to other parts of government, such as UC Berkeley, the Forest Service, and the state parks. We know the state parks have hidden funds elsewhere. This process where one government entity appropriates money to another government entity can only lead to government by connivers. I much prefer the transparent process where the actual appropriations to education or parks or forests or whatever are discussed openly. Also, this process funds unelected bodies like the Association of Bay Area Governments, which appears to presently be usurping local government authority with its One Bay Area plan. Also funded and among the stakeholders are various ideological advocacy groups. Prop 84 has devoted a huge amount of funds to land trusts and easements of various sorts. All these schemes have taken land from private ownership and preclude future private ownership, subdivision, etc. This reverts to the aristocratic land tenure system of the Middle Ages. I find little difference between the omnipotent aristocrats of the past and the replacement omnipotent bureaucrats of today. The entire American dream of land ownership is being assaulted. McCollumy, Amador, Calaveras Integrated Regional Water Management Plan Update Community Outreach Plan contains appropriate wording protecting economically disadvantaged individuals from changes their plan may create. And while certainly there are some individuals too old or disabled to care for themselves, the vast majority of low-income people are better served by plans that make economic growth their priority. Thank you, and I hope this was a counterpoint to the presentation that preceded me.
Thank you, sir.
Cherry Curtis. I live upcountry in the forest area. I have just some questions. So we could be included in the analysis to figure out how much real benefit has come to Amador County because of this process. One of the questions I have, can we have a complete packet that he has given to you that includes all the figures and the cost of the projects done so far? It was not on the website, and so I'm requesting that now.
Don't have a lot of figures and so forth.
Yeah, we can put you in touch with Mr. Branham and the Conservancy, and I'm sure they would provide all that information.
Okay, thank you. The other is, I don't understand when he was saying they have international stakeholders that are helping to do the cost analysis, what the international community is looking at our small county in our area in the Sierra Nevada, and who is it?
And why don't you go through your questions now, and Mr. Branham can answer them.
Okay. Who is on that? The other thing I wish to remind you, if part of their job is to help educate on fire prevention and helping to maintain fire-safe areas, your own fire-safe council could not understand that along with clearing out the 100-foot requirement and debris, that you also need water to stop a fire. And with their rejection of the GSL to support true fire protection, where you have not only education, but you have on-the-ground clearing, you also try to improve your water position in an area that needs a great deal of fire protection. And it's uncanny that one of their goals states that they are to protect. But when it comes to protection of persons and property, it wasn't as equal to them as trees and the animals of the area and the habitat. So I think we need more education to say we have to join hands, and while they can do certain projects, they need to stand up for the real issues and not just call it a political issue. So I just hope that in the future, if we do receive any more grants, that it really goes to true fire protection and forest management. It's unbelievable that certain groups seem to want to destroy any economic benefit to rural areas. And sometimes you get the feeling they would like all people just out of the forest. We are paying for the forest, so where is the money going? Why isn't the Forest Service taking care of it? Why are they getting language put in their rulemaking coming through different sources that all of a sudden is just put in? And I hope that they will realize that local government is one of the best types and forms of government that the people can trust, because they can see what's going on. Those people who are elected know or should know and have the ability to protect the jurisdiction of their counties and state in the system of government we had created under the Constitution. That system seems to be changing. So I just want to thank you for having enough common sense to override some of the things that have happened, and for protecting with what you have been doing for our local forest areas and those people who live upcountry. Thank you.
And would you like to address any of those whites fresh in your mind?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just a couple of things. All of the information about every grant we funded is on our website. And the report that we provided you is also an electronic version of the website. But Brandon Sanders will be happy to follow up and make sure that we can provide that information to anyone that would like to see it. The international organization I talked about, the Nature Conservancy, does work internationally, but they have been very active in the Sierra Nevada in California for a long time, and they are an organization, a conservation organization that does work with a lot of private landowners on a voluntary basis. They have a lot of activities and are also have a policy interest. And the reason I think they were interested in looking at the McCollum was to try to understand the policy implications of doing work in the watershed and benefits downstream. And from a policy standpoint, how do we address that? And they've been very supportive of our efforts to try to increase investment in this region to take care of those issues. So that's the group that I had made a reference to earlier. The only thing I'd say on the fire safe, fire fuels reduction issue is I was not sure I fully understood the comments, but we funded a lot of projects up and down the Sierra Nevada. I think there's a lot of communities that you could go to that could show you on the ground work has been done. We've done some planning projects. Whether you like it or not, doing planning and having a process that you follow before you do the projects seems to us to be a wise approach, so we have done some of that. Back to an earlier comment, overwhelmingly the money we've spent has been not on studies and plans. We've done some of that, but the vast majority of our funds have went to actual project implementation. So that's the other thing I guess I would offer in that regard.
Barry, I'll let you go, but we're not going to get into a point-counterpoint. There should be adequate time to talk to the Sierra Nevada Conservancy staff after the meeting.
Okay, but he didn't answer the question. Where does the money come for the international concern, and who are they?
Well, you mentioned they're the Nature Conservancy.
The group I was talking about was the Nature Conservancy, and they do work around the world, and that's why I said they're international. But that's the organization, and I'm sure they report where their money comes from in some process. I don't know what that is. They are a very large national or international organization, but they have a real focus in some in California. So that's why they have been involved here.
Thank you. Any other public comment, Catherine? Good morning.
Catherine Abbott Volcano. I'm the board president for the Foothill Conservancy. I just want to publicly thank Jim and Brandon and all the staff of the Conservancy and the Conservancy as a whole for all the good work they're doing in the Sierra and in our region, in part because of the attention they paid to the McCollum watershed. We're getting more investment in this watershed and more attention paid to it than has been true in the last 24 years that I've been involved in this sort of thing. The avoided cost analysis is really a useful project. We're involved in that. There are a number of different stakeholders involved in it. Mr. Hoffman, your natural resources consultant, is on the advisory committee or the technical team. We've got all these things going. I can't remember which one. But he's quite involved. And one of the reasons it's really important is all of you understand that fire has consequences to water and power, but what East Bay Mud has said for 20 years, as people have tried to get them to invest in the watershed, is show us the money. And this avoided cost analysis actually does that. It's taking, you know, simulations of fire and sedimentation based on best science and having that analyzed for what it would cost the water utilities. And that's a very important study. And so I just want to thank the Conservancy for undertaking it and for focusing on our watershed. We were very fortunate to get that because it may attract investment here to do a lot of the work that needs to be done. So I just want, and I want to thank them for their support for Amador Calaveras Consensus Group. We're all working real hard. There are logs coming off the forest as a result of our work. There's fuel reduction being done. There's road work being done, Ted, to address your concern about storms. A lot of that sedimentation is coming from roads in the forest. There's meadow restoration, stream restoration being done. People are getting work. And in the area, it's not as much as we'd like. We'd like to build up more. But what you have is a group of people who have really decided to focus on their common ground and work hard together. And we appreciate the support that we've gotten from the Sierra Nevada Conservancy for that, as well as their other work in the area.
Brian?
That question, Ms. Abbott.
Sure.
As far as Amador Calaveras Consensus Group, I guess the working group, have they reached a threshold or size limitation on what they will support as far as removing, as far as in thinnings or logging activities or?
No. Okay. You know, what we do is we really take, you know, part of what constrains that, if you're talking about diameter, is that what you're
exactly
looking
sure
at? Yeah, on the National Forest, the National Forests are constrained by their own policies as far as the diameter of trees that can be removed. More of the discussion that takes place, especially around the mixed conifer fuel reduction, there are some scientific studies that have been done and some work that's been done that focus a lot more on forest structure than on diameter. So we haven't been... We try not to get involved in big, endless debates over things that, you know, may or may not have any justification and may or may not lead anywhere. We try to focus our issues on our efforts on things that actually are productive. And so diameter hasn't been, you know, it comes up. We've been doing a lot of field trips. Supervisor Anetto, I think you'd be welcome to come along and to hear the kinds of discussions that are held. I just, you know, went on one the other day up in Motley Meadow that was led in part by rancher Stan Del Ordo, because a lot of Motley Meadow is privately owned. And looking at what could the Forest Service do on its part? Would that benefit the rancher? How would this help? And it's a lot of good work. So invite you to come along anytime.
Well, I've been to some of those field trips, Ms. Abbott, and also I think this maybe one of the studies you're referencing is probably done by Mr. North. You're talking like the GTR 220?
Mm-hmm, M237. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think actually the work he's done might be pretty good work. Because there's been, he's actually looked at saying, hey, what does it need? Not just saying this is what I want or whatever. And could try to make a model that will maybe make the forest somewhat fire resistant, because it's some either we're either going to do it or it's going to burn. I've been saying that for 25 years, maybe longer. And if you look through history, I think it's, you look around us, there's been some pretty catastrophic fires, and I take no joy in going to those areas. I used to enjoy them. Some of my family's property's been burnt. I used to like going there. I don't go there much anymore. So I'm in a very bad mood when I go there and come back. It's not good.
Well, one thing, I just want to comment on Supervisor Plass's remark on the PG&E Power Fire settlement. The settlement was $43 million. We expect $35 million of that to go into restoration work in the watershed. And whether or not the fire should have happened and how and all that, you know, that's history. But at least there is, you know, has been identified a source of fire. Now there's a funding supply for work that's going to happen on the watershed, put people to work on the ground, you know, and try to restore some of that forest. Supervisor Renetta, I enjoyed as much as you did before it burned.
I just hope the economic model isn't, you know, sue PG&E or private enterprise for the sake of putting money back on the ground. Let me finish. When in the report they mentioned that the reason for this settlement and the size of it was the value of the timber that existed on this property that burned and how many homes it would have built, but at the same time it was spotted owl habitat. Well, we all know the timber would have never been harvested because it was recognized as spotted owl habitat, so to charge PG&E the millions of dollars for this lost resource that never would have been utilized anyway is a farce.
Well,
but it becomes the economic model for this worthwhile work that you talk about.
Well, I don't.
In the end, the ratepayers are paying for it.
I don't think that's the model, and I'm not sure they can pass that on to ratepayers. We'll see. I don't know.
Because well, they pass it on to the stockholders.
Their rates are set by the PUC, and that may or may not be allowed. At any rate, my point is that it's good to have some funds to work with going forward, and we're all trying to move past history to the future and what will be a healthy future for our forests and for our communities. And I think the Sierra Nevada Conservancy has made major contributions to that.
Yeah, before I was chastised by County Council, I want to bring this back to focus to the issue. But on the McCallum avoided cost analysis, was East Bay involved at all? I'm asking you, Jim.
They're involved.
You're probably the person.
They are actively involved. They're actively involved.
Economically or just with personnel?
They have. As far as I know, they haven't made any dollar contribution. But they're definitely looking at it, and they're going to be looking at the results. And there's some allied efforts, associated efforts, to actually do outreach to some of the major water users in the East Bay so that they know their water comes from a real place with, you know, real people and real forests in it. And that's not part of the avoided cost analysis, but it's part of a larger project that's underway.
Taking most of our water, so they should have a big economic stake in the process.
I agree. We agree. Thank you.
Always been the way with East Bay, though. They don't want
to. Come on up, sir.
They're the entity that has to buy into the veracity of this study in the end.
Well, you know, I remember a lawsuit in the when I first got on the board. They sued CDF over fire and sedimentation on the Columbia. So.
Takes a while to write that down.
I'm John Heisenbuttel. I'm a forester in the county and worked all around the country in previous lives.
Are you an endangered species being a forester?
Fortunately, I don't have to pay my bills through logging on Forest Service lands. That would be a tough one. Wanted to echo what Catherine said at the beginning of her statement about congratulating Jim and his crew. They do excellent work. And if people take the time to check out their website, they'd understand that some of the questions that they raised, the first two speakers today, are answered on the website. For example, their biomass work, they come out and explain pretty thoroughly how avoiding burning in the forest will be a net benefit to carbon. And that's a positive thing, and you don't see a state agency saying things like that very often, so that's helpful. I've been involved with their projects that they funded in the county through the Amador Calaveras Consensus Group. I've been an active member of that group for several years now. And they've had positive benefits. I can't say I've seen all the economic benefits that I'd like to see possibly derive from the funding through the Amador Calaveras Consensus Group, but we're working on it. Consensus has been tough, and Brian, you asked a good question of Catherine. What about harvesting real timber? That's been a tough one. We're not there yet. But nobody's walked away from the table, so that's a good thing. Catherine covered the environmental benefits program and referencing that John Hoffman's on that. John's been a real help there. And I wanted to thank the Board of Supervisors for supporting the Sierra Nevada Forest and Community Initiative. I really think Jim's and his staff efforts in bringing folks together is going to pay dividends. And finally, there is some grant money remaining from Prop 84, and Amador Calaveras Consensus Group is going to make a run at that, and we'll keep you informed about what we're doing, and hopefully we'll be successful in bringing money to the county.
For what? For what kind of project are you going to make a run at that for?
This is, it's going to be for helping set up a computer system for the consensus group, plus being able to have a full-time administrator for the consensus group, local employee. It's not a big ad, but it's something we need to start functioning even better and better. Questions? Thanks.
All right, thank you. Any other public comment? Good morning.
Good morning. Kimberly Pruitt with Representative McClintock's office. I just wanted to make a statement about the Sierra Nevada Conservancy's work up in the area that we represent. They've done a lot of good projects. One of the projects I'm actually going to go that they've helped with, I'm going to go tour in a week or two. Stage 10, it's an experimental project where they have implemented the GTR 220 and some of the other forestry projects up there. And although they've done a lot of good work, I do think Supervisor Plass was spot on with the fact that we do need to take more timber out of the woods. 1.5 million gallons of water every year are sucked up in the trees, and we do need to do some more timber harvesting. And so I would like to see more projects, more not just thinning projects, but more projects to implement the GTR 220 and some other techniques to get some more timber out of the woods. One thing that I did want to ask Jim about is the listing of the yellow-legged frog and the Yosemite toad, and if that would be affecting projects that you're trying to implement. And also what the Sierra Nevada Conservancy stance is on the listing.
That was going to be an easy question, Kimberly, and then you threw the second part in. The short answer is yes. I think, you know, species listings complicate the projects. They make it more challenging for Forest Service to lay out a plan if it isn't, if the listing goes forward. You know, we'll deal with it. We'll all be working together to try to fully understand what that means. But it's an added complexity. There's simply no question about that. We don't take a position on listings or things like that. It's really not appropriate for us to do that. But I think we try to be as much as we can honest brokers about what implications that may have, if there are negative implications or positive implications from an environmental economic standpoint. So it's something we're obviously we're following. We're in discussions with the Forest Service. We are just, I won't take too much of a segue, but we are working with the Forest Service, for example, on a conservation plan for Pacific Fisher, another species proposed for listing that would have significant impacts on their ability to manage the forest. So those are important issues, and we're engaged in those, but we're certainly not, we don't take positions per se.
Tim, I didn't see any other speakers, but if you want to make any final comments.
No, I think we've taken enough of your time, but I really appreciate this. It was a great conversation. Really appreciate that, the engagement. And, you know, we tend to be around continuing to do projects for a long time to come, continue to try to move things forward. And I really appreciate the working relationship we've had with members of your board and really all of the supervisors up and down the Sierra Nevada. So thanks again for the time.
Well, for those of us that have known you, I've known you for many years now being an RCRC. Hard position that you have because you really have to walk a fine line. And you go too far one way or the other, you're going to get sued by somebody. So you have to, you've really walked that line and trying to get something accomplished with the limited resources you have. I appreciate you being here today.
Good. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you, Jim.
All right. At this time, we're going to take about a 10-minute break. So we'll come back at about close enough 10 till 11.